I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I am your host, 2 hours a day, offering up an independent thinker's space. A safe space for independent thinkers. How do I screw that up after 3 or 4 years of making that my tagline? But that's what I've got here. We don't do parties. We don't do so. I'm gonna show you how much not of a partisan I am and how I do not worship any political dynasties, because I'm going to make everybody mad in a little while with a clip I've got. So I prove it every day. I don't play the two-party game. This is Friday, next hour. Do False Flag Friday. Got plenty going on in Ukraine and Russia. Some pretty serious stuff is going on. They want this war. They want this war to continue. And we're going to take a look at what the United States, along with NATO, but the U.S. in particular, is doing right now. And I'm going to ask the question, if any other country did what we are doing right now during a war that we were involved in, how would we handle it? It is incredibly escalatory. This is supported by Roger Wicker, Cindy Hyde-Smith, Michael Guest here in Mississippi. And they could stumble us straight into World War III. It doesn't seem like they are going to be satisfied until this is a much, much wider war. We are all now banking on a hope that Vladimir Putin is the bigger person. And I don't approve of war anywhere. I'm the only anti-war voice in Central Mississippi. I don't like his invasion of this, but our future hangs on whether or not Vladimir Putin can control himself. Or is he going to, if Vladimir Putin was to act the way that United States presidents have acted for the past 50 years, it's World War III. We've got to hope that he is not as big of a psychopath as the presidents of the United States have been for decades. All of them. So we'll take a look at that next hour, and then we'll finish up with This Week on the Crazy Train. I've got a bunch of good clips for today's show. Quotes of the day today from Ayn Rand. She said, "You can choose to ignore reality, but you can not ignore the consequences of ignoring reality." This is one of my favorite quotes, because this is what people do. They ignore the reality of things like inflation. They listen to government numbers. They elect people that they think are taking care of them and that love them. They will completely ignore reality. And now they cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality. Most people, I'd say 95% of people, still continuing to ignore reality and instead participate only in narrative. Thomas Massey said, "COVID is to the multinational pharmaceutical industry as Afghanistan was to the military-industrial complex. They have no interest in seeing it end as long as taxpayers are footing the bill." And I think that's a good point to make. That's the reason. I've said it before. The goal of war is not to win. It's to keep the battle going. And I'll prove that to you next hour. I've said this for 5 years since I've come on the show to try to break apart the scam that has enveloped the conservative side of the aisle for decades now, which is endless military budgets and spending on wars and puffing our chests up with patriotic pride by the fact we've got a military that can go topple third world countries and thinking that it's patriotic to support that. when all it is actually is a big heist from U.S. taxpayers, and that heist is going into hyperdrive right now. I've got an interview with the tired turtle, Mitch McConnell, that will play next hour. He cannot give away your money to Ukraine fast enough. He did $13 billion. He wants more. He said, whatever they want, we should give it to them. Can you even imagine being in a position where you look out over the landscape at 330 million Americans and say, oh, yeah, I'll just take a ton of money from them and give it to these guys over here, the Nazis over in Ukraine? That's the leadership of the Republican Party. Is it any wonder that I do not play that game? One of my favorite targets before I get to, you know, I've got certain things I like. I like foreign policy stuff to try to expose the war machine. I like Federal Reserve financial issues. I have certain targets, people like Jack Keane on Fox News, who's been duping people. He's a board member of several different defense contractors, but people love him because he's on Lou Dobbs and says nice things about Donald Trump, and so you buy hook, line, and sinker every war he sells. Without disclosing, he's on the board of directors. He's one of my favorite targets. Mike Pompeo is a target. I don't need to come on here and tell you for 2 hours how bad Joe Biden is. I think you get it, and there's 22 hours left in the day for conservative talk radio to tell you what a disaster Joe Biden is. But I've got some clips that prove it today as well. I've got certain targets that I like to circle back to. And one of my favorite targets of expose is Goldman Sachs. The vampire squid, as Matt Taibbi labeled them years and years ago. Goldman Sachs, these are the oligarchs. These are the controllers of both political parties. Goldman Sachs is actually very, very big in the Republican Party. Treasury secretaries under Republican administrations like Trump and Bush seem to be headed up by anyone? Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs, the vampire squid. This is interesting. Twitter, a lot of talk about Elon Musk taking over Twitter. Twitter hired Goldman Sachs to advise it on the buyout by Elon Musk of $54.20 a share. And Goldman advised Twitter that that was too low. The only problem is that Goldman Sachs actually had a sell rating with a $30 price target on Twitter prior to telling them that the $54.20 was no good. I'm not exactly sure what the game is here, if this is just trying to talk up the stock price and make Elon come off of more money, but it's very interesting that Goldman Sachs thinks the stock is worth $30, but they don't think it's worth selling to Elon Musk at $54.20. There should be, probably will be, class action lawsuits directed at both Twitter and Goldman Sachs if they do not allow Elon Musk to buy at that price point. It's a significant increase. I believe it was 8 or 10% higher than the share price when it was announced. Anyway, further on Goldman Sachs, Goldman Sachs has put some earnings out here, and Goldman Sachs is up to the same games that they were up to. Well, they've been up to for decades, but particularly during the financial crisis, they were exposed. I'm going to play a clip in just a second. But Goldman Sachs, I've told you about the game, which is CNBC and Bloomberg and Fox Business and all of the financial media, the Wall Street Journal. Their game is to go out and tell the retail investor it's always a great time to buy. If the stock market's going down, this is also the game that most people's financial advisor pays too, because they only make money if you invest. If they were to tell you to take your money out and put it into gold or something, they lose that income, so they will never advise you to do that. And Goldman Sachs is constantly telling their clients, oh, it's a great time to buy the dips, everything's great, everything's rosy, you need to come in, you need to buy stocks. And the reason they say that is not because they think they're going to make their clients rich, but because Goldman Sachs itself is going to get rich by the trading activity generated by telling clients to buy stocks. Strange thing enough, though, while Goldman Sachs has been telling its clients to buy stocks, buy into the stock market, painting forecasts that say the stock market's going to overperform and you got to get into the market, while they've been telling their clients that, they've actually been selling. Who is Goldman selling to? anyone who will buy. But here's where we would wager that the retail investors who were on tilt buying in 2021, meaning everybody was trying to get in and get into that stock market, that roaring stock market. But the retail investors have been the proud recipients of billions in Goldman sales, especially those reading the perma-bullish notes from Goldman's chief equity strategist, David Kostin. You understand what I'm saying here? Goldman Sachs has been telling its clients, and this David Kostin's guy, who is a perma-bull, meaning everything is always great, you're always supposed to put your money in the stock market, they've been putting out these messages, you got to get into stocks, buy stocks, stocks are great for the long term. Meanwhile, Goldman Sachs has been quietly exiting its stocks. Now, why I think this is dangerous is because I believe they will pull the plug once the oligarchs are fully out of their positions. They've already gotten all the lemmings, or Muppets, as I'll show you in a second, to go in and bid up the price of all of their stocks. But now they need to get out before they pull the plug on this thing and let your 401k go down the toilet. But they've got to get out of there too. They buy the stocks. They convince you to buy it, which boosts their stock price, right? And then when it gets up to the top where they think they've gotten everything they can get out of it, they'll sell it to you right before it's about to fall. And so with the investor call now over, unfortunately, there was no discussion of the bank's stock sales. Pardon, harvesting. For the second quarter in a row, they've been selling for two quarters now. At least three quarters ago, some analyst asked a question about Goldman's efforts to reduce its equity investment portfolio, to which the bank said it has, quote, made progress on improving its capital efficiency and is moving aggressively to manage equity positions, especially since the environment is supportive. Do you want me to translate that for you? That's Wall Street speak. When they say they've made progress on improving its capital efficiency, that means we're selling a bunch of stocks and we got cash rolling in. We're convincing clients to buy stocks from us because we know the stock market's going to tank. We want to get our money and run. When they say it is moving aggressively to manage equity positions, it means we're selling as fast as we can to get out of this train wreck before it comes off the rails. And when they say, especially since the environment is supportive, what they're saying is, because these dummies out here are just, they're champing at the bit. I think it's champing. Talked about this before. I need to look it up to be sure. I think it's champing. I was surprised. It's champing at the bit, not chomping. But the investors, they've got them all worked up into a tizzy to buy stocks, and this is a great time for Goldman to unload their stocks on the unsuspecting investing public. This story says, what does it mean in English? Simple. In Q1, Goldman continued to aggressively dump its positions, which are in the money, in an environment that is supportive, meaning in which the dumb money is providing a constant bid into which whales such as Goldman can sell. The last time Goldman was aggressively selling into a supportive market, well, we have to go all the way back to, anyone? 2007 and 2008. When Goldman Sachs was busy creating the very CDOs, which its prop desk would then aggressively short. And we remember how that turned out. This was actually a story about congressional testimony. This is Goldman Sachs. And what I want you to remember as you hear this is Goldman Sachs would not even be in business today as an institution had not you, the U.S. taxpayer, bailed them out. And in particular, bailed out AIG, because AIG at the time of the financial crisis owed Goldman Sachs $10 billion. I believe that's the accurate figure. And so the former Goldman Sachs banker that George W. Bush had as his Treasury Secretary bailed out AIG so that AIG could give that $10 billion to Goldman Sachs. Goldman Sachs wouldn't even exist right now without the U.S. taxpayer. And here's a story about testimony from a whistleblower at Goldman Sachs years and years ago during the financial crisis. Listen to how Goldman Sachs refers to their own clients.
Public glimpses into the firm at congressional hearings like this one on the financial crisis. And that's why it's so unusual for a Goldman Sachs insider to resign from the firm through a blistering New York Times op-ed piece. Greg Smith, an executive director, quit after 12 years, writing, "The environment now is as toxic and destructive as I've ever seen it." He writes the company puts itself first ahead of its clients, saying, "It makes me ill how callously people talk about ripping their clients off. Over the last 12 months, I have seen five different managing directors refer to their own clients as Muppets." Goldman Sachs CEO Lloyd Blankfein fired back, sending a memo to a staff of 30,000. "We were disappointed to read the assertions made by this individual that do not reflect our values, our culture, and how the vast majority of people at Goldman Sachs think about the firm."
It was the tip of the iceberg. This is one of the huge money center banks that, again, the U.S. taxpayer bailed out. They're calling their own clients names. Right now, as we speak, they are aggressively selling stocks. Now, do you think that they would be selling stocks out of their portfolio, bank's holdings, if they thought the stock market was going to be doing great in a year or so? No, they are telling people, they are telling the investing public to come in and buy stocks. You got to own stocks for the long term. Everything's rosy. Meanwhile, they are selling to those people that they're convincing to buy so they can get the hell out of this market. And I'm telling you, that is concerning, because the only way that they're going to pull the plug on this market, then understand that the Goldman Sachs of the world own the Federal Reserve. So the Federal Reserve is just waiting. You know, I've been talking a lot about the fact that we've got this huge inflation, but the Federal Reserve's not really budging. They raised rates 0.25% when you've got 8.5% inflation. Back in the 70s, when inflation was high, they were raising interest rates up to 20%. Now they just do 0.25%. What is that? 1/80th of what they did in the 70s. So the Federal Reserve is just trying to buy time. I would imagine there are phone calls or emails. I cannot confirm this, but I would imagine there are phone calls or emails between Goldman Sachs and the Federal Reserve where the Federal Reserve calls up and says, "Hey, we're getting a lot of heat about this inflation. We really need to raise rates. Have you been able to sell all your stocks yet?" And Goldman says, "We're working on it. We got the Muppets on the line. They're lining up. We're tricking everybody into buying. But we've still got money in the market. Hold off on those rate increases. We'll give you the all clear. And when we've got all of our money out of the stock market and we are on the short side of things, we've started to short the market, we'll give you a call." And that's when you bust out the big high interest rates. You see, Goldman Sachs is an owner of the Federal Reserve. They own the Federal Reserve. This is an incestuous relationship, and this bank would not even exist had the Bush administration not bailed them out. A former Goldman Sachs banker at Treasury went against the wishes of 80% of the American people to bail out companies like Goldman Sachs. And if you think they're alone, they may be the worst. They may be the most egregious of the big money banks, but trust me, all of the big banks that got bailed out in 2008 treat their clients exactly the same way. They trade for themselves. What they tell you is only whatever benefits them. It's not about you and you doing well with your investing portfolio. They don't care about you. They're like the politicians. They do what is in their best interest. And it just almost cracks me up that this bank would not even exist. They should have been put out of business in 2008 for the criminal activity they did leading up to 2008. But instead, Hank Paulson, the former Goldman Sachs banker, put into the Treasury Department under George W. Bush, forced through trillions of dollars of bailout money to these institutions so they could continue to abuse the investing public. This is why I don't do 2 hours on just Joe Biden. Be right back.
I went home with a waitress, the way I always do. How was I to know? She was with the Russians.
You know, it is just like a fantasy. We all have different fantasies, right? Like occasionally when I'm in a convenience store and I see that the lottery is $300,000, don't tell Jim Thorne, but I'll pick up a ticket. I'll spend the $2. It's worth the $2 just to think what good I could do with that money and what fun I could have and how I could provide for my children, knowing I'm going to lose. I mean, I know it's just $2. I could flush it down the toilet, but at least with the dream. So we all have fantasies. I've got this bizarre fantasy that everybody wakes up from their stupor at some point and figures out the scam that is being run on them, particularly when it comes to banking. And the thing is that this information is so out there. I was just talking to Sean during the break. He just watched The Big Short. If you've not seen The Big Short, watch The Big Short. Okay, I've mentioned The Big Short, I think, 4 out of the last 5 shows, I am aware. But it does such a good job of explaining to average, ordinary people what took place in 2008. If you can catch a clue on exactly what took place, you'll start to understand what you're seeing. You'll understand politics better. You'll understand economics better. You'll understand inflation. You will understand the world better. And nothing drives me more crazy. And I don't mean this really in a judgy way, but so many people are so ignorant of so many things that it's really hard to have a political conversation with them because they don't understand the true motives behind what politicians and bureaucrats do. You don't understand, you know, why regulations are there. You know, the left is big on wanting to regulate everything because they think these regulatory bodies are there to protect them. No, that's not the case. Industries want to be regulated because the regulations are really expensive, and they know that keeps competitors out because competitors cannot afford to abide by all the regulations. The regulatory regime in this country is actually a way for big corporations to stifle competition. And see, if you don't understand these things, you really are ill-equipped to have any intelligent conversation with anybody about darn near anything when it comes to politics. And people who consume talk radio, political talk radio, love to take talking points they hear from a show or hear from one of their politicians and go out and parrot them. But that politician knows better. They are tricking you. They are tricking you. They know how this game is run. And it is so important to know. And what Sean and I were talking about during the break is, you know, he's watched a lot of these documentaries, too. He brought up the Enron movie. If you've never seen The Smartest Men in the Room, it's a documentary about Enron, complete with actual recordings of the phone calls of these energy traders as they are making fun of rolling blackouts on people. What Enron did was incredibly egregious, criminal activity, and they treat human beings like nothing. Now, you may think I sound like some kind of a leftist. That is not the case. That's the old narrative. Even the Tea Party back in 2010 started to form because they really realized that the country, the game had been rigged for the big money interest in this country. I'm no leftist. I'm a capitalist. What the big banks do, that's not capitalism. Goldman Sachs would have been in ashes at the end of the financial crisis had we let capitalism and free markets operate. Because when you take huge, risky bets, and in Goldman Sachs' case, when you prey upon your customers and you take an extreme risk with a bunch of borrowed money, which is what Goldman Sachs did, when it goes bad, you go bankrupt. That's free market capitalism. We don't have that here. We have cronyism here in this country. We have corporatism in this country, and it is not serving Main Street, and that's who WYAB serves. You'll notice you're not going to hear Citibank ads on our local things. We have got plumbers and tree cutters. We've got Main Street. That's our interest here is Main Street. And it is just my great fantasy that people watch some of these documents. I think they're fascinating. Last night I binge watched 5-minute little clips from a movie called Margin Call. It just popped up on my YouTube feed. This is how I'm just drawn to these things. I've seen this movie 2 or 3 times. In this Margin Call movie, it's an accurate depiction of what took place during the financial crisis. Essentially, one of their analysts discovers one night, oh my gosh, we've got all of these bonds and the housing market is turning against us. And these bonds could wipe out our entire firm. So they meet in the middle of the night. Now, this is a fictionalized version of this, but this is what happened during the financial crisis. They meet in the middle of the night and they say, what are we going to do? If these mortgages keep failing and these products become worthless, it will take down our firm. We're all out of a job. it will destroy the entire company. So they decide in the dark of night, they go, we've got to sell it all before anybody figures it out. So they had to go out and sell things that they knew were worthless, but they went out and sold it like, hey, you got to get in on this. It's a great investment. You need to buy these bonds from us. Look at the yield on these bonds. But they knew in the back of their head, these things are worthless. We got to get them off our books or it's going to destroy our firm. So we're going to go out there and sell them to pension plans. We're going to sell them into retirement plans. We're going to sell them to charitable trusts. We're going to sell them to governments. We're going to sell them to individuals. We're going to sell them to retirees because these things are worthless. And if they're worthless on our balance sheet, we're out of business, so we're going to stick it to the little guy out there. And that's what these banks do. And when you understand these things, you understand. I've got a story in a second. You know, I don't know if people are on my side with this issue or not right now, but I'm going to tick you off in a second with a clip that I've got to show you another whole level of corruption out there. And this is going to be inconvenient corruption. Be warned, trigger alert, whatever you need, run to your safe space. You may not like this next one, but if people ever understood, it is my great fantasy. Because what you will realize if you get a grasp of exactly the con job that is the banking system in this country, and I'm not talking about your local bank that keeps your checking and the teller that you interact with. These are normies out here with the rest of us. They're not in the C-suites of these big institutions. But if you ever figured out really the banking system, you'd realize that all of these politicians on both sides of the aisle are serving them, that you shouldn't be fighting for them. You shouldn't be carrying water for them. That's where their money and power comes from, these big banking centers. You might actually realize that your liberal cousin or your Trump-loving brother-in-law is not your problem. It's not why your life, your way of life is declining. It's because of these institutions. And there's so many documentaries and so many fantastic things to go out there and look at with these things. The information is just, it's just right out there. Hell, it's on streaming services. It's where Americans spend about 80% of their waking hours is streaming something on Netflix or Hulu or Prime. These things are out there for you. And a lot of times, like I said with The Big Short the other day, it's even got one of those Ryan guys, one of the sexy guys, ladies. I get all the Channings and Ryans confused when it comes to the... But, you know, these are big stars. They had Steve Carell in The Big Short. They're well-produced things. They're easy to watch. They're even entertaining. And you might actually learn something. It is my great fantasy that the American people wake up to this scam, the absolute looting of the American system done by the top 0.01%. It's not even the 1%. To all the liberals and Democrats out there who think that the doctors and the business owners, small business owners are your problem because they've got a nice car and they get to live in some of the fancier neighborhoods, they are not your problem. Your problem is this teeny tiny sliver of people at the very top of this system. And crying racism and marching in the streets against cops and stuff, that ain't getting you anywhere. It's not getting you anywhere but into more dangerous situations through defunding the police. More about that later on in the show. It's not helping you in the slightest bit. And you have every bit of capability that anybody else with a streaming service or with a desire to learn about this stuff has. You could learn all this in a weekend and understand it. Or you can listen to this show, and I'll continue to expose it. As I said, I'm going to do one that's not going to be popular when I come back, but it is just more political corruption in this country. Be right back. Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Trigger alert. Escape to your safe space. You know, this show is a lot about corruption. I'm trying to wake people up and explain to you, you've been had by both political parties, by a whole lot of people, even some of those you don't suspect. Another thing I do not do here on this show is I don't do hypocrisy. I am constantly searching for anything inside of me, any views that I hold that seem to be hypocritical. I may be guilty of it sometimes, but I think I'm one of the most consistent people out there because I don't have to carry water for anybody. No politician, no party, no nothing. See, I don't have to twist my logic into a pretzel to justify why my guy or my party does something that if the other party or the other guy did it, I would say they're a criminal. See, I don't have to do that because I don't fall in love with politicians. I don't trust any of them. Don't like about 97.4% of them. This is not going to be popular. I'm going to play a clip from MSNBC, and I got to tell you, I kind of agree with it. I've already got you. I shouldn't have said that up front. I shouldn't have even told you who this was, because now people have already got their preconceived ideas that, oh, it's MSNBC, it must be a hit piece. No, this is real. And I just, well, I'll just let you listen to the clip, and then I'll ask a question after it.
Because we're now learning that 6 months after that visit, the Saudis invested $2 billion with a B dollars in Kushner's new private equity firm. Man, what an entrepreneur. Now, you could say, well, he's a well-connected businessman with a very famous name. You know, one of those legacy cases that money just dumps on the head of. That's just how things work. But, I mean, the other thing you got to say here is Jared Kushner, again, got a name. His daddy made a lot of money. Not a very good businessman. In fact, a panel that screens investments for the main Saudi sovereign wealth fund cited many concerns about the proposed deal, including the experience of the fund's management, that would be Jared, the possibility the kingdom would be responsible for the bulk of the investment and risk. They found the fledgling firm's operations to be, and I'm quoting here, unsatisfactory in all aspects. Is that bad? And objected to a proposed asset management fee that, quote, seems excessive. But guess what? Mohammed, Jared's buddy, the dude he texts with, the guy that apparently ordered the murder of a dissident because he wrote columns about democracy, that guy, Crown Prince, MBS, Jared's homie, overruled them for his old buddy Jared. Isn't that a nice story of friendship?
Hunter Biden is corrupt. He's a trust fund screw-up kid with all kinds of weird perversions and addictions. He's quite obviously on the take running scams, corrupt scams with Ukraine and China and anybody else he could trade his Diddy's name on. And I'm sure Joe Biden is equally corrupt and was involved in these things. And there's money sloshing around the Biden crime family. There's no doubt about it. But this is where I don't do hypocrisy. I have not heard anybody on conservative media talking about the fact that Jared Kushner just got $2 billion from Saudi Arabia to start some fund that even the Saudi Arabians who were considering his proposal said, the fees are awfully high. Jared sure is going to make a lot of money on this deal. He doesn't seem to have the experience to run this fund. But Jared Kushner just secured $2 billion from the Saudi Arabians. Now, these are the Saudi Arabians who are our great friends, right? Trump went over and did the sword dance with them. It was his first international trip. These are the same Saudi Arabians that are, right now as we speak, murdering civilians in Yemen. You remember, we're very concerned with human rights here in this country when it comes to Ukraine, not so much when it comes to the people of Yemen. Why is it different when Hunter Biden collects $500,000 a month from some corrupt oligarch in Ukraine than when Jared Kushner gets a $2 billion investment for a fund that doesn't sound like it really is situated to be a wise investment? Why is it that we don't talk about Jared Kushner cozying up and trading on the Trump administration, his role there, to secure $2 billion from Saudi Arabia? I told you, I warned you, I told you there's a trigger alert. Now, I'm sure there's a bunch of people out there that are justifying in your heads right now, well, it's different, Mike, because you'll figure it out. Somebody in conservative media will figure out a way to explain to you that this is completely above reproach, that Jared Kushner is just he's just such a competent businessman that he deserves this $2 billion investment from the Saudi Arabians. Hunter Biden, he doesn't know anything. And it's true. Hunter Biden, he's not qualified for any of these things. But I'm just curious why we don't talk about the $2 billion that Jared Kushner just got and apparently is not really not worthy of in terms of it being an investment. But the butchers of Saudi Arabia just dropped $2 billion at his feet. You don't smell any corruption there? The Trump administration was so different than all the rest. He was such an outsider. He's one of us. I mean, he's a billionaire and all, but he loves us. And everything he did was America first. Jared Kushner, $2 billion from the Saudi Arabians. What do you think he's making off that? I'm not supposed to talk about it. I understand. I'll leave it there. It's going to make you uncomfortable for a little while, but just hang in there. Some conservative, somebody on Breitbart will explain to you why it's okay that Jared Kushner gets $2 billion from the Saudis, but it's not okay that Hunter Biden got $2 billion from the Chinese. They'll draw some level of a distinction, even though there is no difference. It is rank and file corruption. I'm sick of seeing it happen. I don't care who does it.
Yeah. It's been a ride. I guess I had to go to that place to get to this one. Now some of you might still be in that place. If you're trying to get out, just follow me.
Next hour, we're going to talk about the train wreck that is evolving in Russia. And I'm going to pose the question to Americans. What would we do if somebody was operating against us the way that we're operating against Russia right now? I would suspect we might take some action, and this is what I'm afraid of. We'll talk about that in a minute. I want to finish out this financial stuff because the Biden administration, I'll show you the corruption at their level too. Get you back on my side. You know, it's all got to be partisan. To satiate the masses. Everybody wants there to be one good guy and one bad guy. It is just against human nature to believe they're all bad guys. You know who the good guys are? We are. There are good guys and bad guys. We're the good guys. Republicans and Democrats, blacks and whites, young and old, Americans who are just out here trying to make a living, raise a family, we are the good guys. The people at the top are the bad guys. It is that simple. I mean, not everybody at the bottom is bad. Not everybody at the top is, not everybody at the bottom is good. Not everybody at the top is bad. But if you want to cast a wide net and say it's us against them, for you to do it across the street to your neighbors is so misguided. The Biden administration is putting up a new nominee for a big banking position. This guy's name is Michael Barr. There's a website out there, the revolvingdoorproject.org, and they look at all of these people who go from industry into government positions. I've talked endlessly about the revolving door here because it's part of the great scam that most Americans don't understand. Now, you understand it if, if I tell you that Obama was beholden to Citigroup and Obama got more money from the banking sector than either McCain or Romney. I mean, Barack Obama was bought and paid for by the banking industry, and everybody's widely open to that. Not so much open to when I tell you that Donald Trump put an Eli Lilly executive in at Health and Human Services. Somehow we're supposed to justify that. Put a Raytheon guy in at the Defense Department. We're supposed to justify that. But Biden is just continuing this corruption. Revolving Door Project Executive Director Jeff Hauser issued the following statement on the Biden administration's new nominee to be the Federal Reserve's vice chair for supervision. Supervision. Quote, Michael Barr was too close to fintech and cryptocurrency schemers to be the comptroller of the currency, and he is still too close to them to be vice chair for supervision. Placing him at the top of the Fed's regulatory efforts would also send a cynical message to anyone who hoped Democrats had realized that preserving too big to fail after 2008 was a mistake. Sheila Barr, one of the heroines of the 2008 crisis, personally named Barr, and this is the guy that Biden is now putting up to be the head supervisor at the Fed. Sheila Barr, one of the heroines of 2008 crisis, personally named Barr in her memoirs, pushing Congress for, quote, flexibility to do future bailouts. And says shifting away from bailing out the banks came, quote, much to the consternation of this Michael Barr. Under Barr's disastrous leadership, the Obama-era HAMP program went from freeing homeowners from unaffordable mortgages to freeing banks from any consequences for their own bad actions. with home buyers sacrificed to preserve Wall Street. This was during the Obama administration. And now one of these characters behind the bailouts of the big banks at the expense of homeowners is being nominated by the Biden administration to serve as the head of supervision at the Federal Reserve. Now, this is probably exactly what the Federal Reserve wants and what the Biden administration wants, because we're about to see a whole nother round of bailouts. It would have happened under the Trump administration or the Biden administration. It'll happen under the next administration. This is who they serve. And Joe Biden, with all of his folksy talk about how he's serving the little people and he wants equity and equality and all the rest of this stuff, no, he's just feathering his nest. The same level of corruption that is in every single one of these administrations. I am just so glad I fell out of love with a party so I don't have to justify the corruption on the right and only focus on the corruption of the left. I am free to point it all out, whether it's Jared Kushner or this Michael Barr character. The only thing I don't know, this Michael Barr character has been in government for a long time. How is he getting paid? He's not bailing out banks and setting up rules for their benefit at the expense of little people for nothing. I want to know where the money is.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
What is it good for?
Absolutely
nothing.
Say it again, y'all.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB, and it's Friday, so every Friday at 10 o'clock, we shift over to foreign policy stuff, and there's some serious stuff going on. Ukraine seemed to kind of fade from the headlines. First, there was the slap at the Grammys. That was, what, about 3 days of just wall-to-wall coverage of the slap. We had the shooter in New York City subways. Cameras weren't working, so we can't see pictures of it. I'm just saying. The guy was known to the FBI for years. I'm just saying. But anyway, the way this thing in Ukraine is going is not good. And we're going to kind of get into that. But one of the most disgusting things about what's taking place right now, I had a conversation last night with a Democrat friend of mine. I keep all of my friends, regardless of how they vote. This is a kind of a holdover from the past where you could have civil conversations with people you disagree with and still have fun and enjoy their company and all this stuff. I still do those old-fashioned things. Anyway, I was talking to this girl, and she's anti-Putin. And we started talking about that situation. And I asked her if she kind of knew the history of what's taken place over the last 10 years. And she really knew very, very little about it. And it was very interesting to have this conversation with her. There were a lot of times where I would kind of explain the 2014 coup where we overthrew the government in Ukraine. She really didn't know much about that. Really? I talked about the last 10 years where the Ukrainian government has tried to ethnically cleanse Russians, meaning murder Russians, ethnic Russians, in eastern Ukraine and the Donbass region and Crimea. She really didn't know anything about that. Where they built a dam, the Ukrainians built a dam to try to cut off the water, to kill all the agriculture and the drinking water from the people of Crimea. She was not aware of that. It's very interesting. And just to talk to somebody, and this is what happens when you actually have a conversation with somebody that you disagree with rather than screaming at them over Twitter. It's kind of an interesting conversation. Now, she may go right back to, if she's got Democrat friends who have been convinced to hate Putin, she may not have the courage to stand up to him and go, hey, well, listen, you know, I'm no Putin fan either, but, I mean, this is a little different than the way the media is telling it. She may not have the courage to do that. Most people don't. Most people will not speak up against their tribe for fear of being ostracized. You got to carry water for your side. Aren't you on the team? Oh, now you love Putin, I guess. You know, this is the kind of snide stuff she would get. But anyway, it was interesting to realize how much context is left out of the Ukrainian versus Russia situation. But it all comes down to one thing, just like my first hour talked about. Tax day, they've given you 3 days in observance of Emancipation Day. The freeing of the slaves, they're going to allow the American taxpayer slaves 3 extra days before you pay what you owe. So tax day is not till Monday, but just feel good about where those tax dollars are going.
Well, Ukraine's military did get a boost today in a phone call with President Zelensky. President Biden pledged an additional $800 million in weapons, ammunition, and security assistance. The president also approved the transfer of helicopters to Zelensky's forces. Tonight, CBS's David Martin gives us an exclusive look at a shipment of U.S. military weapons bound for the battlefield.
That's a hell of a system we've got set up here, isn't it? Where a dementia patient can actually get on the phone and just take $800 million from his citizens and just give it to a country halfway around the world, just in a phone call. I can imagine Zelensky going, ugh, it is so tiring talking to Joe Biden. He stutters and mumbles. I can't really understand him and stuff. Yes, sir, but you need to call him because, you know, every time you call him, we get a bunch of money. Yeah, okay, all right, I'll make the call. And got off the phone and went, good God, this guy is supposedly the leader of the free world. What a nut job. I can't believe I work for him. I'm paraphrasing Zelensky here because Zelensky is a U.S. puppet. But I guess it was worth making the phone call because he stole $800 million from U.S. taxpayers and just gave it to us. Just in the course of a phone call. We were on the phone for 20 minutes, $800 million for a 20-minute phone call with a dementia patient. I guess it's worth it. You know, what is that? That's $2.4 billion an hour just for a 20-minute phone call with Joe Biden.
Hundreds of Javelin anti-tank missiles.
Cha-ching.
Pallet after pallet of the weapons that are destroying Russian tanks.
Cha-ching. Cha-ching.
Loaded aboard a cargo aircraft at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware, bound for the battlefield in Ukraine.
What are the hazards here?
The hazards are it's a high explosive. These are Javelin missiles.
Since the Russian invasion began, the U.S. has committed more than $2.5 billion worth of weapons and other military equipment to Ukraine.
There you go, $2.5 billion. Now, there's a lot of you out there saying, oh, that Joe Biden, just giving a bunch of money away to the Ukrainians. I told that's what you get when you elect a Democrat. They just spend all that. I want to remind you, it was the tired turtle, Mitch McConnell, who got behind the podium and was upset. He was upset that the Democrats didn't hurry along with his request for $13 billion to be given to Ukraine. And I got a clip of him in just a second. This was a couple of weeks ago. Mitch McConnell, the head of the fiscally responsible Republicans, gave Ukraine $13 billion of your dollars. And he was upset that the Democrats didn't do it fast enough.
It arrives at Dover in unmarked trucks driven from ammunition dumps located all over the United States. These Javelins came in on Monday and were scheduled to fly out this afternoon.
Our goal is to be agile and to move the requirements quickly so the folks on the other end do not have to wait for the material.
Ukraine. Now, somebody else I was listening to made a very good point. You heard him say that these things came from ammo dumps. Let me tell you the operation it seems that's going on right now. We're clearing out the shelves of the old stuff. We're sending it over to Ukraine. We're giving it to them for free. You paid top dollar for it when it was first bought from Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics. And now we're clearing the shelves. We got to restock, right? We got to call Raytheon and tell them, look, we just gave away all of our Stingers and all of this and all of that. We've cleared the shelves, given everything to Ukraine. Now the cupboards are bare. We're going to have to boost our military budget, which they do, and we're going to be spending a lot more money with Raytheon and Lockheed Martin and General Dynamics and AM General because we're giving Ukraine all of these weapons, all the weapons that you paid for, supposedly to defend your own country. I guess they were going to expire. Maybe there's an expiration sticker on a Javelin missile.
Ukraine may not be a member of NATO, but Ukrainian officers are working directly with NATO to get weapons into the hands of their soldiers.
They are in contact with the senior leaders in Ukraine, to include the chief of defense and the ministers of defense, and are prioritizing their requirements based on usage rates and what they see on the ground.
The Ukrainians may be out fighting the Russians, but they still need more firepower to counter the buildup of Russian forces in the east.
Ka-ching,
and to somehow stop the merciless bombardment of cities.
Are you in this to win?
Yes, sir, we are in it.
In it to win?
We are in it to win. It's the top priority.
But the plane we saw loaded with Javelins was delayed for 14 hours by a mechanical problem. So the Ukrainians will have to wait for their next shipment.
Oh, don't worry, Ukraine. 14 hours. During that time, you can probably make another phone call to Joe Biden and get another $1 billion. It's just unbelievable. It's all the Democrats' fault, right? It's Joe Biden. He's the worst president ever. I'm with you. He may be the worst president in American or world history, but it ain't just him.
Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who joins us from Louisville, Kentucky this morning. Good morning to you, sir. Welcome to Face the Nation.
Good morning.
President Biden heads to Europe this week to meet with NATO allies. You helped give him about $13 billion in urgent support, along with the rest of Congress. What do you expect?
Didn't you love the way they talk about this? Mitch McConnell gave Joe Biden $13 billion to give to the Ukrainians. It almost sounds, the way they phrase it, like it's their money. What a magnanimous man this Mitch McConnell is for giving Joe Biden $13 billion. No talk of where that money came from. Or the children that will be saddled with the debt to print it up. It's just given. And I want you to listen to Mitch McConnell, the head of the Republican, the fiscally conservative Republicans.
Expect the president to deliver this week.
Well, we've given him plenty of money. I think he needs to step up his game. He's generally done the right thing, but never soon enough. I mean, let's take a look at what's happened here. The Ukrainians have killed more Russians in 3 weeks than we lost in Afghanistan and Iraq in 20 years. I think we ought to go into this believing the Ukrainians can actually win. And the way they win is for us to get these defensive weapon systems to them as rapidly as possible.
Oh, boy, I tell you what, I mean, Raytheon and Lockheed Martin, they've got Mitch McConnell's cell phone. There's no doubt about that. Okay, Mitch, where are we here? We got contracts. You guys need to sign them. We're ready to go. We got the production going. And I wonder if they even have to really produce as much as ordered. You know what I mean? I mean, there's so much corruption. I don't even know if they have to produce. Have you sent us a check yet, Mitch? We just came from the P.O. box, and we still do not have that $6 billion check you said you were sending. Are you sending it? Yep, we're trying to do it as fast as we can. These Democrats are dragging their heels. We want to do it as fast as possible.
For example, I am perplexed as to why we couldn't get the Polish Russian MiGs into the country. The Ukrainians have plenty of pilots and know how to fly them. Mm-hmm. In those Eastern Bloc countries, they have Soviet ground-to-air systems.
What Mitch McConnell's describing is the kickoff to World War III. He just doesn't understand why we cannot get all of these countries to all aggress against Russia at the same time. He's mystified of why we cannot start killing more Russians in the skies. He's giddy about the fact we're killing a bunch of Russians on the ground. Can we not kill Russians in the skies, too? And if we can get all of these other countries to participate so that Russia is also attacked by them as well, this is Mitch McConnell talking up World War III.
Systems that the Ukrainians know how to work. We have the resources we've given to the president to get those weapons in there as rapidly as possible.
We have the resources. How are you faring these days? Do you have the resources to continue to fill up your car with gas? Do you have the resources to buy all the food you want from the grocery store? Do you have the resources to take that vacation this year? Do you have the resources to put your kids through college without any debt? No, because your resources are Mitch McConnell's resources now.
Right.
And then we provided loan guarantees to the countries that ship the weapons into Ukraine to purchase new weapons and probably better weapons from us. So what?
How about that? Do you understand what that means in English? We basically contact other countries and go, hey, you need to send some weapons into Ukraine too. Luckily, the donor class here, the Raytheons, the Lockheed Martins, the United Technologies, our guys make them. So I tell you what, you borrow the money to buy weapons from our weapons manufacturers. We'll guarantee the loans. If you default on them, the U.S. taxpayer will stand up and pay your debts to Raytheon, to Lockheed Martin. It's not enough that our treasury, our government is spending about $1 trillion a year with these people. We want other countries to step up, too, and we'll guarantee the loans. They will put the U.S. taxpayer on the hook for another country that finances weapons from Lockheed Martin.
What I'd like to see the president do is to reassure our Eastern Bloc allies. It's fine to go to Brussels, fine to go to Berlin. I'd like to see him go to Romania or Poland or to the Baltics. They're right.
Get all of them buying weapons from us.
Right on the front lines, right, and need to know that we're in this fight with them to win.
There aren't a lot of policy differences here, really. You agree with the president.
It's because we all have the same donors, the Republicans, the Democrats. We've all got the same donor class. We've all got the same people behind us. So when it comes to war, there is no difference in us because our donors want the same thing.
President, that there should not be a no-fly zone. There's a matter of a few dozen MiG fighter jets there, but I don't hear a lot of policy differences from Republicans. In your view, does the $13 billion that you all just authorized ensure the funding of a Ukrainian insurgency if the government were to fall? Like, how long does this money last for?
Well, if they need more, we ought to give them more.
There you go. I kept it going for that, just for that one little nugget. If Ukraine needs more, we ought to give them more. Yeah. Yeah. I'm constantly reminded why I left the Republican Party. I'll be right back. The reason I say things are getting so dangerous over between Russia and Ukraine right now is because they're not ratcheting it down. There's no serious talk of peace talks right now. We're doubling down. We're sending more money. We are publicly announcing that we're sending them as many weapons as we can, as much money as we can, and we're trying to get other countries that are on Russia's border to do the same thing. Let me ask you the question. If we were locked in a conflict, if the Chinese, or let's use the old Soviet Union to make it a kind of a tit-for-tat here. If the old Soviet Union, the expansionist communist empire, had overthrown the government of Canada 8 years ago and installed a pro-Soviet Union, hostile to the United States regime in Canada, and we got locked into battle with them, what do you think we would do if we saw ships coming across the Atlantic from Germany to provide weapons to the communist government in Canada that was killing American troops? You think we'd let those ships just continue to rearm the Soviet Empire government of Canada? Do you think we would allow an endless stream of weapons from other countries? Or would we view it as a very hostile act for somebody to be arming the country that was killing our soldiers? And the thing that really just cracks me up about this whole thing, we went over to Iraq based on just a lie about the fact that Saddam Hussein might have possessed some weapons that he couldn't even get to the United States. He might have just possessed some weapons. He wasn't doing anything offensive with those. Now, they told you he was going to, because they were inside the mind of Saddam Hussein. We went 7,000 miles away just on the rumor that a guy had some weapons. In Russia's case, they went across an imaginary line with one of their neighbors, because their neighbor, legitimately, the U.S. was bragging about sending. Donald Trump, unfortunately, is the one that sent lethal weapons. He bragged about it. He said the Obama administration was too chicken to send offensive and lethal weapons into Ukraine, but I will. So we were bragging about sending weapons that were being used to murder ethnic Russians in Ukraine. And now as these shipments come in, as we're trying to get jets in there, we're sending helicopters, we're sending javelins. What do you think Russia thinks about us arming the Ukrainians to kill more Russians? It's one thing if we stand in solidarity with the Nazi government of Ukraine, as bizarre as that is in today's world. It's another thing to be funneling them the money and the weapons to be used to kill Russians. The Russians notice we're doing this. We're not doing it covertly. That's Mitch McConnell on CBS this morning, on Sunday morning, saying, we're going to get them everything they need. If they need more, we'll send them more. We're sending them lethal weapons. We are killing Russians by proxy and trying to get Poland to kill Russians by proxy in Ukraine. and to get Lithuania to kill Russians by proxy in Ukraine and in Russia. Ukraine is now bombing inside the borders of Russia, too. These are psychopathic people, and not one of them, not the Roger Wickers. I doubt Cindy Hyde-Smith is on the front lines. I haven't seen her. I cannot confirm that, but I'm gonna imagine that Roger Wicker has not donned his camo and is fighting in the streets of Kiev right now, but he is perfectly happy to strip you of $13 billion and let the Russians know we're funding your enemy. And if this continues to ratchet up, there's talk now about the Russian warship that has been sunk or has been badly damaged. There's conflicting reports on exactly what's happened, but it looks like some of the weapons that... I think the Ukrainians actually used one of their own missiles on this ship. I looked it up to see if it was a Raytheon product or not. Luckily, I guess, maybe it wasn't. It was a Ukrainian missile that was used, a Neptune, I believe it is, was used to attack this ship, but this is just going to provoke more of a response from Russia. The psychopaths in Washington, D.C., and at NATO, they want this war, and they are going to do whatever they can to continue to provoke Russia and prolong this thing until it gets out of hand. And I just do not want anybody to ever forget, in your lust for the vast majority, that's rude for me to say it that way. Most people have caught on to this game. But there's a lot of normies out there right now telling you that, oh, look what Joe Biden's doing. They're not paying attention to the Mitch McConnells giving them $13 billion and telling them, whatever you need, we've got it. If you can kill more Russians, we're here to help. That is dangerous. These people are dragging us to World War III. And if I can pick on one more of my favorite targets here, one of the biggest warmongers that twisted the Christian conservative mind into being a bloodthirsty warmonger, it worked with me. They did it to me. Thank goodness I broke the trance. But still trying is the ever war cheerleader, Sean Hannity. He had Sean Penn on. Sean Hannity had Sean Penn on his show to talk about how maybe we just aren't going nuclear enough.
This extraordinary courage that's come up, and it was in his eyes, and it is clear to me that the Ukrainians will win this. The question is, at what cost? Did they have...
Yeah, we will fight down to the last Ukrainian. We don't care about those people. If it hurts Russia, we will sacrifice every Ukrainian man, woman, and child in that country if we need to.
Have in those early hours, I know that Trump gave them javelins.
There you go. I know Trump helped provoke Russia by giving the Ukrainians javelin missiles to murder ethnic Russians in eastern Russia. And Sean Hannity is trying to convince you to be proud of that. I think that was a genius move by Donald Trump. That's why I told you, this is an Obama, Trump, Biden operation. They all did everything they could to provoke Russia. Sean Hannity is trying to get you to be proud of it.
The question is, at what cost? Did they have, in those early hours... I know that Trump gave them javelins. I know that they had some defenses. But if you go back to the Budapest Agreement, they were at the time the third largest nuclear power in the world. Mm-hmm. And they made an agreement that they'd give those weapons to Russia to be destroyed in exchange for protection from Russia, Great Britain, and the U.S. Lesson to be learned here, don't give up your nuclear weapons if you have them, because you can't believe people like Vladimir Putin.
Well, even countries that have nuclear weapons.
Unbelievable how bad, how evil Sean Hannity is. Unbelievable people still follow this guy.
Weapons can remain intimidated to use them, and we're seeing that now with our own country. And I fear what that legacy is going to be. No one wants to see a nuclear conflict.
I don't want to see one. Nobody
at the same time, one bully is going to be able to use those weapons as a threat, we got to rethink what we're doing.
Yeah. Do you get what they're saying? They're both saying, well, neither one of us want to see a nuclear war, but we need to be prepared to use them. That's Sean Hannity and Sean Penn trying to stoke a nuclear war with Russia. I don't know. I didn't see this. This came to me as an audio clip. I don't know if Sean Hannity was reporting from the front lines in Ukraine. He's so excited about defeating the Russians in Ukraine. Certainly, he, along with Roger Wicker and Mitch McConnell, are all suited up fighting on the front lines. I mean, I know that they would not stoke war to kill innocent people in Ukraine and in Russia. I know they wouldn't do that from their penthouse apartments, would they? What's the frequency, can it be sharp and so dream? All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Woof, man, this war stuff gets me so hot on the collar. I mean, innocent people are dying right now for no good reason. It is for power and for profit for a very small sliver of the population. And the fact they're able to drag 330 million Americans and billions of people around the world to just suffer under these people is just tough for me to take. We'll try to get into some more just bizarre, almost humorous things here, and this week on The Crazy Train. All aboard! There is still COVID stuff going on, and I don't want to rehash that. I'd like to ignore it, too. Believe me, I'm done with it. I'm over COVID. I have been for quite a while, but it is almost comical, some of the stuff that still is coming out about this. And this is Dr. Jen Ashton. She's on ABC. She's their chief medical correspondent. She's asked a question about the masks, and her answer was interesting.
Dr. Jen Ashton here now with the answer to a question our viewers are asking. First one here, does wearing a mask cause a weakening of the immune system?
Well, obviously, we don't have long-term data.
Wait, what? I'm sorry, what now? You don't know if masks weaken the immune system? You don't have any long... The masks have been around for, I don't know what, a couple of centuries now? We had a bunch of mask science going into 2019. It all said that it doesn't do anything to stop a aerosolized respiratory virus, but you ignored that. But they haven't even studied they've got you trapped in this mask for 2 years now, many of you. Not my listeners, but you know who I'm talking about. The same Joe Biden's got a 33% approval rating right now. I think that's inflated. I can't imagine there's a third of the country that still thinks he's doing a smash-up job. But I guess this is the same 33% of people that I see still wearing these masks. But I can't. Does wearing a mask actually weaken your immune system? This is the chief medical correspondent for ABC saying, I don't know. We haven't really looked at it.
Dr. Jen Ashton here now with the answer to a question our viewers are asking. First one here, does wearing a mask cause a weakening of the immune system?
Well, obviously, we don't have long-term data on this, right? Because we're just 2 years, I say just in air quotes, into this mask wearing and our new everyday life.
Yeah, it could be hurting you. It could be making you more susceptible. And if you look at anywhere that's kept mask mandates, and you understand the people have gotten sicker between the vaccines and the mask, those places have fared the worst. So anecdotally, seems that way. Pfizer always making the moves. You really got to... You've got to appreciate the true greed and opportunism of Pfizer.
A cough contains more information than you'd think.
What we've found in our research is that cough sounds provide us information about what's going on inside your lungs.
And that's led to the creation of ResApp.
We start off by asking a date of birth.
It claims to be able to pick up whether someone has COVID-19 by assessing five coughs into the phone.
We're at 92% sensitivity, so that means that we identify 92% of people who have COVID.
Oh, and you can trust their statistics. Remember, the vaccines were 95% effective with no chance of hospitalization or death. The vaccines originally were said to be 100% protective against hospitalizations or death. So we can trust this 92% accuracy on coughing into your phone.
Just through their cough sounds.
The app has sparked worldwide interest, with Pfizer now wanting to buy the Brisbane startup for $100 million.
You gotta love it. Man, they are running a scam here. So they buy something, you cough into your phone. Let me guess, I've got COVID, right? And let me guess, you've got a pill for that? Holy cow. They will never stop. Never, ever, ever stop. They have looked into those of us out here who are vaccine hesitant or resistant. I can't remember. I think they call it resistant. They've done some studies and found out something about us.
A study out of Duke is shedding light on why some people are more vaccine resistant than others. The researchers used a database that's been tracking 1,000 people born in 1972 and 1973 in New Zealand. Since childhood, their social, psychological, and health factors were measured. Researchers found participants who are now vaccine resistant suffered abuse, neglect, threats, and deprivation at an early age. As a result, they mistrust adults, family, friends, coworkers, and authority figures. The pandemic may have triggered a fight to survive centered on the self rather than institutions.
So we're all abused people. We're all insane. To be honest with you, I had a great upbringing. I was not abused by anybody as a child. I didn't start hating and distrusting authority until 15, 20 years ago. As I got older, I was not formed by my opinion. I'll tell you why I mistrust the vaccines, why I'm vaccine hesitant. It's not because I was abused as a child. This has a part to play in it.
Brownlow medalist Ollie Wines remains in hospital tonight with a worrying heart issue. Live to Mitch Cleary with the latest. Mitch, Wines was subbed out of last night's game against Melbourne.
Well, Tim, the Power and Medicos are tonight exploring inflammation around Wines' heart, known as myocarditis, after he presented with an irregular heartbeat last night. It's expected he will miss matches, but the full timeline won't be known for several days as they conduct further investigations.
If any investigators want to call me, I've got something you can look at. I played this earlier in the week, a sports show that's not filled with pharmaceutical ads like our own ESPN was able to air this little segment the other day.
Ollie wants to just what's this space at this stage? Nothing coming out of the Port Adelaide team this morning, Kane, over his subbing out of the game on Thursday night for nausea/heart reasons. He spent time in hospital, and yeah, it's a big unknown as to when he will play again. It may be as soon as this week, but nothing coming out of the club at this stage.
There's a lot of this going on in world sport at the moment.
Well, in the world.
World sports?
Yeah, I think
a lot of athletes have got these issues.
And are you, Brownie, referring to the booster shots?
I'm referring
and
the booster shots. That's obviously COVID. Yeah. The word going around.
Look, it's being discussed. I haven't been able to get an official line on that from anyone attached to Ollie Wines at this stage. But yeah, the question is being asked and put to me and others, and clearly yourself, by a lot of people about a possibility of that.
But it's not just the heart issues. I mean, like, you know, without delving into your private affairs, you know, you've got Bell's palsy at the moment.
This is when he turns it over to and the camera focuses in on one of the five sportscasters there at the dais behind the big table. And one of them's got a droopy face from the booster.
Hopefully you're on the back end of that. But there's a bit of that going around as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's got heart issues and Bell's palsy has gone through the roof since the boosters and COVID issues. So no doubt. And we had Michelangelo Ricci on AW on Friday night, and he said that Wines, there's a ward filled with people with similar symptoms in Adelaide to Ollie Wines. So nausea, heart issues. So there has to be something more to it.
Yeah, we're not anti-vaxxers. We've all done our due diligence with our booster shots and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, we've all taken the shots. Probably freaking out a little bit about now, aren't you?
But there is going to have to be some study done on this, not just in a sporting sphere, but like a community sphere.
And you're right, though, because we don't want to get into the space we're not experts in at all.
Yeah. But you are experts in the fact you've been broadcasters for all of your adult life, obsessed with sports, and you're noticing that healthy young athletes are suddenly subbing out of games for heart problems and dying on the field, which has never happened in your career. You can speak to that, and apparently in Australia, they have the freedom to do it. I'll be right back.
From all over the world, this is Captain America calling. I built you up when you were down on your knees, so will you catch me now? I'm falling.
All right, final segment for the week. Putting another one in the books this weekend. You're looking for somewhere to go, somewhere to get a good bite to eat for pickup or dine in. Check out Your Pie up in Gluckstadt, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway, right up there by Germantown High School. They've got 10 and now 14-inch brick oven-fired pizzas, pastas, paninis, salads, gelato, beer, wine. They got it all. Televisions if you want to catch a game. It's a great atmosphere with a great staff up there. Locally owned, veteran owned. Make sure you download their app. Check for the Your Pie app. And when you come in, you will come many times. You can scan your receipts. There's a barcode at the bottom of the receipts. You earn points for free goodies, free pizzas, free desserts, all kinds of stuff. So make sure that you download their app. You can also order on that app as well and swing by and pick it up. You can also check out Take a Break Deliveries. They are the official delivery service for your pie. So if you want to get it delivered to your home, it's takeabreakdeliveries.com. But that's Your Pie, 340 Calhoun Station Parkway. As I say, locally owned, veteran owned, express your inner pizza. All right, we're going to finish up this week on the crazy train. This was Biden's spokeshole, Jen Psaki. She hadn't moved over to MSNBC yet. She's going to explain inflation to you and the cause of it.
So because of the actions we've taken to address the Putin price hike, we are in a better place than we were.
It's the Putin price hike.
Last month. But we expect March CPI headline inflation to be extraordinarily elevated due to Putin's price hike. And we expect a large difference between core and headline inflation reflecting the global disruptions in.
Yeah, so she's dancing around this idea that it's not the government's fault that you have inflation. Of course, she's going to try to trick the Democrats and any Republicans that are dumb enough to fall for it that this is inflation is all Putin's fault. The Republicans will try to trick the Republicans and any Democrats that are stupid enough to fall for it that it's all Biden's fault. And they'll do everything they can to dance around the fact that it is government spending facilitated by the endless money printing of the Federal Reserve is the actual cause of it. The manipulation of the minds of Americans never ends. Let's see what else we got. Oh, we got some of this was Biden. I just found that this morning. He went to Iowa. He has said that he's going to allow because, you know, he is our king and all. He's going to allow cars to now run on 15% ethanol instead of 10%. Of course, this has nothing to do with price of fuel. It has nothing to do with anything except for pandering to Iowa voters. Republicans Joni Ernst and Chuck Grassley cheered for this move by the Biden administration because it fattens the wallets of the big ag corn farmers in Iowa. But now he wants to do this in your planes as well.
I've set a goal of zero carbon for aviation sector, for example, by 2050. I've spoken with the leading heads of all major airlines. It's going to require billions of gallons of sustainable aviation fuel. And you simply can't get to net zero by 2050 without biofuels. Aviation.
Oh, they're pulling out their checkbooks as we speak. Oh, he's about to funnel a bunch of government and airline money towards more corn in the tanks.
Aviation is the case where you blend in a little bit of biofuel. It's where it's called drop-in, meaning 100% biofuel. You don't need to take my word for it. Take the word of the CEO of American Airlines, who said, sustainable aviation fuel is the cornerstone of our strategy, end of quote. And the CEO of United Airlines, who called the first biofuel-powered flight a significant milestone for our efforts to decarbonize our industry. To bring that future within reach, I proposed a sustainable aviation fuel tax that we brought together the governments, the agencies, aircraft manufacturers, airlines, fuel producers, airports, advanced, cleaner, and more sustainable fuels for American aviation. That's how we're going to get there. And we can. We're in the cusp of so many significant.
Yeah, it's a tax. They're adding a new tax. This will be on every airplane ticket that you buy. You're going to start paying a tax so we can start putting corn in the tanks of airplanes as well. I got to tell you, I've already heard bad things, and I am no mechanic. I am ignorant of car engines. Makes me less manly, I know, but that's a price I pay. I am ignorant about car, but my understanding is that this corn sloshing around in our tanks, not good for our engines. That seems pretty important when you're flying. But that's their plan for us. The airline executives, I'm sure, are just saying, okay, I'm going to issue a statement on this, Joe. You're still going to keep cutting the airline's checks, right? As long as you're going to keep bailing us out and keep sending us federal money, I'll say whatever you want me to say. So there you go. This is just a marble mouth Biden, where he makes a bit of a gaffe.
Imagine had the tobacco industry been immune to being sued.
Imagine if the tobacco companies had been immune to prostitution. Let's see. Joe Biden's not. He's not moving fast enough on these biofuels for airlines. You know, we've heard before, 10 years. I think AOC set the bar. We got 10 years before the climate tips. Boy, this 10 years has gone by fast.
All right, a new United Nations report on climate change warns the world has only 3 years to act in order to avoid an irreversible catastrophe.
Whoa.
Meanwhile, a California startup is doing its part to cut down on greenhouse gas emissions by creating a new kind of alternative meat.
Okay, get a load of this one. So there you go. We got 3 years. I kind of like these short time horizons so they can be wronger faster.
CBS's Carter Evans reports as part of our new series, American Innovation.
Today we're going to be making a little air protein chicken korma.
It's a classic Indian dish with a twist.
It looks like regular chicken the way it cooks. Yeah. You know, it gets that little crust on the outside there.
That's the beauty of it.
Physicist Lisa Dyson is the founder and CEO of Air Protein, and CBS News is getting an exclusive look at a product she says has the taste and texture of meat, but does not come from animals. It's created using a fermentation process similar to making yogurt, but instead of using microbes that consume milk and sugar, Air Protein uses microbes that eat oxygen, nitrogen, and carbon dioxide.
How does it work?
You start off with cultures, then you feed it elements of the air, and it grows and grows and grows, just like that yogurt culture. You dry that, and you get to a protein-rich flour.
And that can be processed to mimic chicken, seafood, and beef.
We can grow enough material to make a steak in a matter of hours.
Air meat. Air meat. This is where they're at. Now we don't need no stinking pharmacist. Farmers. We've got physicists making our meat. I'll finish on this fun one. This is an airport PA system. See if you can hear this one.
Airport, thank you. Please leave your terminal one baggage claim. Airport, thank you. Please leave your terminal one baggage claim.
It's tough audio, but it is the airlines paging Mr. Disney Groomer to meet your passenger. Mr. Disney Groomer. I love the sense of humor of people. Have a great Easter weekend. See you Monday. Bye-bye.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now.